Hello and welcome to the third annual Why Your Team Sucks Bracket Breakdown here on the College Basketball Talk on NBC Sports podcast. It is Selection Sunday, March 17th. My name is Rob Dosser. I have a great conversation on the way for you today. I was joined by the one and only Brian Snow from 24/7 Sports, and we went through and filled out an entire bracket for your NCAA tournament pool needs. It is the best analysis that you are going to get anywhere. And if you listen to this and you enjoy it, I would really appreciate if you would throw me 5 stars and say something nice and give me a nice review. All of the interactions that you have with this podcast and the apps that you listen to podcasts in, it helps us in the rankings. It helps us in the metrics. And this is the most important time of year for being up high in those rankings and being up high in those metrics. So if you like what you hear on this podcast, give me 5 stars. Say something nice about me. I promise you, it really does help. And I thank everybody that has already gone through and done that so far this year. We've spent the entire season ranked somewhere in the top 5 to the top 10 of all college sports podcasts on iTunes. That's a big achievement, and I promise you, my bosses are very, very happy. Now let's get into that conversation with Brian Snow. And now let me welcome back onto the podcast the man that everybody loves to hate, Mr. Brian Snow. It is the Why Your Team Sucks Bracket Breakdown Podcast. I am fired up. I love this time of year, Snow. I know you do too. So what's going on, man? I know you got some things you got to get off your chest. So before we actually go through and fill out an entire bracket, I'm going to let you say your piece. I know you got to get it out. I know you got to vent. So let's go. What's the problem, man?
I have a philosophical issue just fundamentally with what Bernard Muir said and with some of the selections. Now, let me first make it clear. If you got left out, it's not because a good team got left out. You got left out because you're not very good. But as I've told you, Rob, I'm a process guy. The process has to make sense. You might get bad results, but the process has to make sense. Bernard Muir used a stupid process. In essence, they decided every loss that you could take is the same. There's no such thing as a good or a bad loss. A loss is a loss. And you saw that with them rewarding not only inclusion, but high seeds to teams like VCU, UCF, and then including Belmont, including Temple. I have no explanation for Temple being put in this event other than they wanted to give Fran Dunphy a retirement gift.
Well, elaborate on that. Why Temple? Why the issue? And who do you think that they should have replaced them with?
I would put TCU in over Temple. I would put Indiana in over Temple. Hell, I would put Texas in over Temple. Temple has what? I think they're 2-5 against Quad 1. I believe they played something like 17 Quad 3 and 4 games. Yet they still had, what, I think like 8 or 9 losses. Well, of course, if you have, like, let's take Indiana. I think they have 15 losses, Rob, maybe 16. Well, of course, if you play 6 or 7 Quad 3 and 4 games versus 17, you're going to end up with more losses. That's just ignorant to count it the same. And then those schools actually beat good teams. Temple had 2 wins. 2. Both of which at home. Like, what the hell did they accomplish?
They didn't accomplish all that much. They do have that one really good win against Houston at home, which probably looks better when you're looking at those net nitty-gritty team sheets, where I believe Houston is still number 4, as opposed to looking at the rankings where Houston is, what, like 13th or 14th or something like that. So that probably played a little bit of a role. But I don't necessarily disagree with you, man. Temple was – they were not the team that I was going to ride for. I don't necessarily have a problem with somebody like Texas or somebody like Indiana or Alabama getting left out just because I'm not going to get bent out of shape over a 500 team not being in the NCAA tournament. But I don't think that Temple did anything.
What you're saying is you now want these schools, which are playing 18 or 20 conference games in really good conferences, to schedule like crap the first 2 months of the season. That's what you're saying.
No, I don't. But what I'm saying is that
you do.
No, because I don't think that Temple should be in the tournament. I don't think that they have a tournament resume. I just don't know if there are teams 69, 70, 71. I don't think that they have tournament resumes either. So while I agree with the point that you're making, and I'm on the same page as you, believe me, I am on the same page as you. I can't find it within me to get worked up about a team that lost 12 out of 13 at one point this season not getting into the tournament.
Okay, I'm looking at VCU right now, their team sheet. You know how many quad three and four games VCU had?
Let me guess. They played, I want to say, 21 of their 30.
Overall, 23.
Wow.
23!
That's a lot. And if you wanted to question where they were seeded, I would because they're what, an 8 seed in the East?
Yeah, which is mind-boggling. Like, unless Marcus Evans, not only is he healthy, but he got cloned a couple times, I don't understand how on earth they could be an 8 seed.
And are we buying the idea that Marcus Evans is healthy?
Hell no. But let me make it clear. If I was VCU, I would have said not only is he healthy, he's practicing in full, and he just raised his vertical leap by 8 inches.
And they actually added another Achilles that he had torn earlier. So not only is his knee fine, his Achilles, both of which he's torn, are actually 100% better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame VCU at all. I mean, I just look at it, I'm like, you played 23 quad three and four games with three bad losses. Could you imagine a team from the Big Ten with three bad losses? Would they have any chance of getting in?
Probably not, but I don't know if a team from the Big Ten would actually have three bad losses. And that's the thing. Like, I don't understand. To me, it's the seeding more than who actually got in. Because I don't, like I said, I don't really have any desire to sit here and rail on the committee for leaving a Texas team that went 16-16 out. And yes, I agree with everything you're saying. I just don't know if Texas is a team that I want to get on a hill and die for. I don't know if NC State is the team I want to get on a hill and die for. I do think that TCU probably has the biggest gripe. But I don't know if they necessarily did enough to actually get in the tournament. It's baffling, though. And it's not just VCU, dude. It's like Washington is a 9 seed, and they don't have a single win over a top 50 team this year.
It makes no sense. All they did was count losses, and that's my fundamental problem. Like, literally, I've been texting with coaches, especially in my region. I live in Indiana, so you have a lot of Big Ten, Big East schools. They're like, we're not scheduling anybody next year non-conference because we know we're going to take losses in the league.
That's actually a really good point.
Unless you're really good, like, you look at it, the whole Big East is basically returning next year. It's going to be really good. The Big Ten is going to be really good. Big East, you play 18 games. Big Ten, you play 20. Unless you're incredibly good, you're going to lose 8 games in the league. Then you've got, you know, your league challenges and, you know, maybe a rivalry game, whatever. That's like 10 losses right there. You can't afford to schedule another one with the way this committee went about their business.
And there are certainly, like, the one thing that you have to be careful of is putting together a schedule that isn't going to rank anywhere near the top of the non-conference schedule ranks, right? Like NC State, the reason they're not in the tournament, and they weren't even close, by the way, Snow. I don't know if you saw the tweet from David Warlock, but they weren't even one of the first four out.
Because they're going to make, because they use the SOS number, and I was like, they're going to make a point with NC State. So I didn't have them as one of my first four out either. But you have to be a little bit smarter than NC State was. But like the teams, like Horizon teams, Metro Atlantic teams, Mid-American Conference teams, they have so much leverage right now. They could get $150,000 to $175,000 a bye game if they play it right. Because playing those teams, who, if you're a high major and a decent one, you're going to beat at home, that does wonders for your resume now. Mm-hmm. You just have to avoid the 250-plus games, which, for reasons unknown to mankind, NC State decided not to do.
Yeah, they scheduled like 6 or 7 of them, and that brought the whole thing down. You know, they actually played Auburn, they played Penn State, they played somebody else in non-conference that was actually pretty good. What brought it down was at the bottom of their schedule was just absolutely atrocious.
If you show any savvy, like, now granted, every committee's different. I understand that. But if you show any savvy in your scheduling, you can limit your losses, and you would have been rewarded this year, which is a terrible precedent to set.
You want the proof of that? You want the proof of that? VCU. You know what their non-conference schedule was?
It was like 65 or something.
No,
or
their non-conference strength schedule was number 2. Number two in all of college basketball. Because they played at Virginia. They played at Texas. They played Temple. They played St. John's. They played at Old Dominion. They played a lot of road games. And they didn't, like, none of the teams that they played at the bottom end of their schedule. Like, if you look at their worst, like, the worst teams that they played, it's like LaSalle, UMass, Fordham, George Washington, like teams in their conference. All of the teams that they played in non-conference were pretty good, and they didn't have any of those absolutely atrocious teams on their schedule. And that's what you're probably going to end up seeing. I think that's actually a really good point.
Like, if you're, if, and then when Bernard Muir basically came out and said, like, we don't want you losing games, what, like, I have a fundamental issue with college football playoff for this reason. They have made it so that if you're a good team, like a team that has a chance to make the college football playoff, you should never play anybody worth a damn in the non-conference, ever, because it can't help you. It can only hurt you. The same thing is starting to happen in college basketball if a committee is going to act this way again, where you don't want to play teams you can lose to in the non-conference because they're just counting losses. That's a fundamental problem.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that we're going to – I think what's going to happen is we're going to see it, I guess, come into fruition in the way that teams schedule next year. I guess, is that what you're saying?
I mean, not every college basketball program is savvy. So, you know, some will not realize what the hell they're doing. But the savvy ones, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's too bad. So you want to talk about the actual bracket itself?
Might as well.
Let's do it. So what we're going to do is we're going to walk through the entire bracket. We're going to talk about every single game, and we're going to fill out an entire bracket. Are you ready for that, Snow?
Yeah, I'm ready.
I'm curious to see which games that we disagree the most on, because I figure there's going to be a couple. I'm going to start in the East region. You got one in front of you. You ready to go?
Yeah.
All right, let's start with Duke against North Carolina Central or North Dakota State. Do you have a number 16 seed coming out of nowhere to beat the number one overall seed again, Snow?
Are we anticipating a coordinated bear attack on Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, and Trey Jones?
We are not.
Okay, then no, I got Duke.
Yep. The one interesting thing about that is if North Carolina Central wins, then we have two teams from the city of Durham in North Carolina playing, which I guess is probably only cool to me. So let's move on. VCU, UCF. I'm going to call this the Brian Snowball.
Yeah, I got UCF because, one, I just don't believe Marcus Evans is going to play. And two, I think the way UCF guards gives VCU problems. So I'm gonna go with UCF to get the win. That, and quite honestly, I just want the sheer amazing notion of Zion Williamson trying to dunk on Taco Fall.
I didn't even think about that until right now. That would be amazing. I don't disagree with that at all. If Marcus Evans is not playing for VCU, VCU is not going to be able to score. They're already like a sub 200 team in offensive efficiency on KenPom, and that's not very good. And that is with Marcus Evans, who is their best player and their best scorer. So if he's not there or he's not healthy, then this could end up getting ugly. And I'll tell you what, I am also going to hammer the under in that game. I think you have to.
Oh, yeah. VCU, they're like a guaranteed under.
Yep. All right, so let's move on. Mississippi State and Liberty. I can't imagine that you would ever pick a team out of the Atlantic Sun that finished second in the conference.
Yeah, I got Mississippi State in this one.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that it was Liberty that ended up getting a 12 seed in this bracket. If you look at some of the teams that got 13s and 14s, like UC Irvine, like Yale, who else? Like Georgia State, Vermont. I was a little surprised that it was Liberty that ended up getting one of the number 12 seeds. And I am with you. I think that Mississippi State finds a way to get this job done. So let's move on. Virginia Tech and St. Louis. You have Justin Robinson. Allegedly, it was announced today, 3 hours before the brackets were revealed, that he is going to be back and playing. Are you buying it, Snow? Are you buying that Justin Robinson is back?
Yeah, I think he'll play, but I'm not sure that's a good thing. I mean, this dude's missed a month of basketball.
And he is also, I would say, the best point guard in the ACC. I think that when he and Nickeil Alexander-Walker are firing on all cylinders, you can make an argument that they're the best backcourt in college basketball. Is that crazy?
No, best backcourt in college basketball. I'd have to think about it. It might be slightly aggressive. But they're really good. I told myself I wouldn't pick VCU to win. Virginia Tech to win. And St. Louis, like, they've underachieved all year. They really have. They're the most talented team in the A-10 by a mile. I actually have St. Louis pulling the upset here.
I could see that happening. I called a game that they did, and I was absolutely blown away by how talented they were. They don't look anything like what you would think an Atlantic 10 team should look like. And it's absolutely baffling to me that they were as bad as they were. I think that says a little bit about...
Makes no sense. Says like a little, Hassan French.
He is Jordan so good. He is an absolute Spade monster. Isabel.
Like, those are dudes.
Yep. And they can really defend, too. The problem is they can't score. They can't shoot, first of all, and they can't score. And Travis Ford is not the kind of coach who's going to put these guys into actions where they're going to find a way to... let's put it like this. He's not Bob McKillop.
No, that's not him.
No. So it's really going to come down to whether or not they can get enough stops. And if Justin Robinson has a flat tire or if he's not playing at 100%, then I think that you might be right. So are we going with St. Louis for this upset?
I mean, if you're against it, I'm not going to call my congressman. But
I don't think that Justin Robinson is going to be 100%. I don't know if he's actually healthy, and I don't know if I fully believe what Virginia Tech is saying when they say that he is back and ready to go and firing. It just, the timing is very convenient. So I think I lean St. Louis.
Okay.
Let's do it. Belmont or Temple? Who do we have going out of that playing game?
I got Temple just because I think I don't think Belmont has an answer for Shiz Alston. And also a flat P as a shot blocker. That allows Temple to really extend out to Belmont shooters. And I think Temple beats Belmont.
I think I agree with that. And you know how much I love this Belmont team and this Belmont program. You also got to throw in the fact that their big fella, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, the big Polish kid, he has a sprained ankle and he didn't play in the Ohio Valley title game. I just don't know how Belmont's guards are going to stay in front of Temple's guards.
It strikes me as a bad matchup for them.
Yeah, people listening to this probably haven't watched Temple play all that much. They have like three really, really good, talented perimeter playmakers in Shiz Alston and
Quentin Rose
and Nate Pierre Louis. Louis. Yeah, that's better. You can't be a Pierre Louis. You got to be a Pierre Louis.
So and I have Maryland rocking Temple.
I don't know. I don't know if I trust Maryland. You trust Maryland?
Do I trust Maryland? No. Do I trust them to beat Temple? Yes.
All right.
One team has Bruno Fernando and one doesn't.
That is a very good point. And Anthony Cowan ain't half bad either. The thing about Maryland to me is I've never really bought into them this season because they're just so damn young.
Again, I'm not picking them to go to the Final Four. I'm picking them to beat Temple.
Fair enough. Let's move on. LSU against Yale in the Battle of New Haven. Tremont Waters is a New Haven native. Yale is located in New Haven. Will Wade will not be coaching. Javonte Smart will be playing. What do you got here, Snow?
I was actually a lot more impressed with Yale than I expected to be today. That said, I mean, like, as good as Yale looked, like, LSU's insanely talented. Give me LSU.
I kind of want to take Yale here. There's a couple reasons why. One, Yale has an NBA player on the roster in Mieoni. He is, if he ends up coming out this year, he will be a top 40, top 45 pick. He's 6'6". He's got a 7-foot wingspan. He's a combo guard. He can really, really play.
Can you really go to an Ivy League school and then leave early?
I think he's going to try.
Like, that just seems counterintuitive to me. But nonetheless.
So I think that he is a guy, I don't want to say that he'll be the best player on the floor, but there is a chance that he could have the best game out of anybody on that team, and I don't think that it would necessarily be crazy. I think that Jordan Bruner is exactly the kind of player that can, at the very least, match up with Naz Reid. The one concern that I have
with... Skylar Mays is the problem.
Yes, Skylar Mays is a problem. Because Yale does not, they have one really big, really athletic wing in Mieoni. And the problem is LSU has like three of them. So you're going to have to figure out how you're going to guard. The other problem is like Yale got their ass kicked today by Harvard on the offensive glass. And that is Harvard's big guys, not Naz Reid and Cavell Bigby-Williams.
Yeah, like Cavell Bigby-Williams, he might not be able to catch a ball, but like he'll bat it up to himself and he'll catch it four times. And, like, I just don't see Yale being able to, like, stop that from happening.
It'll be a problem. It'll be a problem for sure. I just I don't know if I want to. I'm not going to take LSU to go very far. I'll tell you that much. But the problem is I don't trust. It's almost like
this is about to be a 6-hour podcast, Doster.
Yes, a substitute teacher syndrome. I'm just trying to talk you into taking Yale. Will Wade's not there, right? They have Tony Benford coaching. What has Tony Benford done?
Have you met me before? You think I'm going to take like a smart team?
No, you're not. You're definitely not. But Yale is not like your typical smart team.
What do you mean, Rob?
They got dudes. They got dudes.
That's not what you mean.
They got dudes.
That's not what you mean even a little bit.
They have NBA players on the roster.
Fine, just put Yale through.
Thank you.
You've worn me down.
All right, next up is I think the most fascinating matchup of them all. We have the Rick Pitino Bowl, Louisville going up against the Minnesota program that is coached by the son of the man that Louisville fired. Who you got here, Snow?
Louisville. I just think Jordan Nwora is the best player on the court. Now, don't get me wrong. How did I just blank on Jordan Murphy is a bad dude. But Malik Williams is the type of kid who can give Jordan Murphy a lot of problems. Defensively, Steve Enoch can pick and pop as well. I just think – and Minnesota doesn't press. And as we've seen, Louisville doesn't handle pressure very well. That in Minnesota is too up and down. They can – apparently they can beat Purdue and nobody else. So I'm going with Louisville because Louisville's name is not Purdue.
Yeah, you're going to find throughout this podcast that I don't necessarily trust anybody that is a member of the Big Ten this season. So I'm fine with that. The only thing that I will say is I got a feeling that Rich Pitino was going to have those guys fired up and ready to play. I would not be surprised if like Rick Pitino showed up for all those practices and he was there letting everybody know like, hey, these guys fired me. So I think that is at least something to think about, but I have no problem.
Were they not going to be fired up for an NCAA tournament game?
Maybe not, but I'm perfectly fine with picking Chris Mack at all times.
All right, Michigan State over Bradley. Shut up. Let's go.
There we go. All right, Duke UCF. Is there any chance that UCF gets that done? Johnny Dawkins against his old program.
No.
No, I'm with you. We can probably just pencil Duke into the Elite Eight at the very least.
I think we both will take Mississippi State over SLU.
Yes, we will. You got any chance that Mississippi State picks off Duke? Is there a reason to discuss that?
No.
Okay. Maryland against Yale.
I actually like have more confidence in Yale to beat Maryland than I do LSU, that's for sure. When you get Jalen Smith and Bruno Fernando, I guess I would have to go with Maryland.
I will let you have this one. I'm not gonna ride for Yale twice. I'm not gonna ride for a 14 seed into the Sweet 16. No, I'm not gonna do it. I'm not gonna let myself do it. Louisville, Michigan State, what do you like?
One team has Cassius Winston and one team has Kristen Cunningham.
That is the expert analysis. I think I'm going to have to agree with you on that one. As much as I want to pick Chris Mack to make another run, he always seems to pop up out of these like 7-10 games and get somewhere.
Yeah, he tends to be better when he's not a top seed.
Yep. But as the saying goes, January, February, Izzo, April, and I'm not going to pick against him in this situation. So we end up with, we already have Duke in the Elite Eight, and now we have Maryland and Michigan State. I cannot see myself letting.
Yeah, I'll take Izzo over Turgeon. I'll take Cassius Winston over Anthony Cowan. And then I think Kenny Goins picking and popping is going to have Bruno and Jalen Smith spinning in circles. I'll go with the Spartans.
I am 100% in agreement with you. So the last thing we have is Duke and Michigan State. What do you make of that matchup?
I would love to see Cassius Winston against Trey Jones because it's probably the best offensive point guard against the best defensive point guard in the country. But at the end of the day, I just don't think Michigan State has enough weapons. And the other thing is Duke can put Zion at the five and cause Michigan State a boatload of issues.
Yep.
Because what they're going to do is put him at the five, take Nick Ward out of the paint, and he can't guard anybody. And then Zion is actually bigger than Nick Ward, so he can handle him in the post.
So the one thing I would say about that is this. Michigan State is now 3-0 against Michigan. And I know that like Michigan and Duke are very different animals, but the idea
– I cannot figure out what it is about that matchup. I have no idea.
Doesn't make sense. And all three of those games, Michigan had a big second half lead and they ended up blowing it down the stretch.
Like, there is something about that matchup that I'm not seeing that greatly favors Michigan State. And I have, like, I probably watched each team play 20 games, and I don't know what it is.
My guess is it's a mental thing. My guess is that at some point, like, Cassius is just willing Michigan State, and then Michigan sees this run happening, and they're just kind of let it go and lose themselves, I guess. I don't really know. That's the only explanation I have, because it's not a matchup thing. If you look at the matchups, it makes no sense.
Yeah, as I said, I'm just completely lost.
Well, the point that I was going to make, and I just kind of wanted your thoughts on, was that Izzo has found a way to play a team that can't really shoot, how to effectively guard them defensively. And while I fully acknowledge that figuring out how to stop Michigan offensively is very, very different than figuring out how to stop Duke defensively, I do think that there is something to the idea that Izzo will be able to figure something out, because it just seems like he's more willing this year to be able to change things in terms of what he was doing before. So do you think that has any merit, or am I just kind of thinking
over there? There's some merit there. I just think at the end of the day, like, Duke's going to make enough plays. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, the Cam Reddish will make enough threes, or RJ Barrett's going to, you know, like, who's guarding RJ Barrett?
I mean, that's another problem, because it doesn't look like Kyle Aarons is going to be out there anytime soon. Like, he would have been an important guy in that matchup. Exactly. I think Aarons would have been an important guy in that matchup, because he is, like, what, like 6'5", and kind of athletic and pretty damn tough. He would have been a perfect guy to, like, stick on RJ Barrett and just say, do what you can. Don't let him get to his left hand. Try to get physical with him and do what you can. And they don't have him now. At least I'm not expecting that they will.
Yeah. Seems tough.
Yep. All right. So Duke in the Final Four. Let's go to the West now, because they're on the same side of the bracket as Duke is. I'm assuming that you have Gonzaga winning.
Yeah, I think they can beat Fairleigh Dickinson.
I agree with you there. Syracuse and Baylor, the battle of the zone defenses.
Interesting game.
It really
is. Very, very interesting
game. It really is.
I guess I lean Syracuse, and I don't really have a good reason why.
Are you 100% sure that Tyus Battle is going to be good to go?
No. But I think you got Frank Howard. You know, their guards are bigger than Baylor's, and wings, and Buddy Ball might bang in a couple threes. I just kind of like Syracuse a little bit more, but if you prefer Baylor, you can feel free to pencil that one in.
I do not. I'm not going to pick against Syracuse in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I'm just not going to do it. Because what they do is they get there, and teams don't know how to play against the zone, and they find a way to make a run. And that's the one reason why I might think about taking Baylor in this situation. It's like they practice every single day against the zone. It's not the same, but it's not really all that dissimilar. Like, the whole theory behind playing the zone is that teams can't run their normal offense. So the reason you play a zone is to make them play an offense that is suboptimal for them, that they don't run as often, take them out of what they want to do, and let them kind of just try to figure it out against the zone. A lot of teams can't do it. There might be a world where Baylor can actually do that because they practice it and play it every single day. But I'm going to bet on Syracuse in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I'm just going to do it. So move on?
Yes.
This might be my favorite matchup of the first round of the NCAA tournament. We have Marquette and Marcus Howard, who may or may not have two hands at the moment, against Murray State and Ja Morant. Snow, talk to me about this game. What do you like?
I like Marquette because of Theo John, believe it or not. So much of Ja Morant is being able to get to the rim, beat guards off the dribble, and then finish. Theo John's an elite shot blocker. And I just think that combination gives Marquette the advantage. That, and, you know, Marquette's just such a good shooting team. Even though they haven't set the world on fire the last couple weeks, I just happen to think this is a matchup that sets up pretty well for their personnel.
Yep, and Murray State's wings. Like, Murray State is very much Ja Morant and nothing else. I've watched them play like three or four games from start to finish the season, and there really is not much on there that you can trust outside of Ja. It's basically Ja and everybody else. And I'm not convinced that Marquette will be able to slow him down, but I don't think that the rest of those guys are going to be able to do anything. So we might see Ja Morant go out and get like 45 and Murray State put up 65. I would not be surprised to see something like that. The other problem is their wings are kind of smaller, and the Housers, while they're not super athletic, they are like 6'8" and 6'9", and they are going to be able to get shots off over smaller defenders. And I'm not really worried about them being able to get it going.
And the other thing it does, it allows Marquette to hide Marcus Howard. They'll put Sakaar Anum on John Morant.
Yep.
And they can hide Marcus Howard on the defensive end. Where that becomes a problem is if the other team has big guards, you can't really do that. But with Murray State not having that, they can get John Morant off of Marcus Howard and onto Sakaar Anum. And that makes John Morant's clearly a better player and he's going to get his, it makes it a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Sakaar Anum is not going to stop John Morant, but he's definitely good enough defensively to make him work.
Yes.
All right, so we're all in on Marquette?
Yeah.
Florida State and Vermont, what do you like here?
Kyle Saplicki's beard is really impressive, but Florida State is really athletic and Vermont really isn't athletic.
Looking at it, out of all the four seeds, this is the one where you can kind of say, Vermont probably doesn't have a chance against this group. I would have liked them against Virginia Tech. I would have liked them against Kansas State. I would have liked them against Kansas, against Florida State, and like a never-ending line of 6'7" athletic dudes with Fiondo Cabangeli coming off the bench. I can't do it. I can't pick Vermont here. And I want to pick Vermont. I just can't do it.
I'm with you.
All right, Florida State, second round. Arizona State or St. John's, do we think either of them has a chance to beat Buffalo?
No, let's not even pick Arizona State, St. John's, because it'll make me puke. So I'm going Buffalo into the second round.
I'm so glad you said that, because there was no part of me that wanted to talk about that game. I wish we could just erase that game from the map. That right there, that game is why...
It'll be unintentional comedy, though. It really will.
I'm sure it'll be entertaining, because there's going to be so much stupid shit that happens.
It'll be wild. Like, guys will just be left wide open for no real apparent reason. It'll be wild to watch. It really will. I don't know that it'll be entertaining, but it'll be wild to watch.
That's probably the way to put it. It's not going to be high-level basketball. I will say that. All right, Texas Tech and Northern Kentucky. I do love me some Northern Kentucky, but I think that I'm going to have to ride with Texas Tech here. Talk me out of it.
No, Jarrett Culver's too much. Texas Tech's too disciplined on defense. Northern Kentucky, they're solid, but I think this is a real bad matchup for them. So
I agree with you there. Nevada and Florida. This is actually a really interesting game to me.
Yeah, you know, I've got Nevada because Florida employs small, unathletic guards for the most – well, their freshmen are. Obviously, Kayvon Allen's a little bit of a different story. But I just think Nevada with Jazz Johnson and the Martin twins and what have you, I just like Nevada a little bit, plus the toughness of Jordan Caroline. I'm going to lean Nevada.
Yeah, and they're all old too. Like, we're talking about 22, 23-year-old men, where Florida has a bunch of like freshmen that are playing. And they're good. Like, Andrew Nembhard's going to be a really, really good player. The Keontae Johnson kid, am I saying that name right?
Yeah.
The big kid they got.
Locke. Yeah, be good.
But they're going to have really good players on that team. I just think that they're probably a year or two away from getting there. And I just, when it comes down to it, I think that this is what Nevada has kind of been waiting for, right? They've been waiting for this situation. They've been waiting to get back to the tournament. I don't think that they cared all that much about the regular season. I don't think that they cared about the Mountain West tournament. I think they care about the NCAA tournament, and they care about finding a way to get to the NBA afterwards. So I fully expect the Martin twins and Jordan Caroline, all of them, to try to go out and get 40 every single game that they play.
Makes sense.
So Nevada?
Nevada.
Michigan?
Michigan.
Gonzaga, Syracuse, who you got?
Even though this sets up pretty well for Syracuse, I'm still going to go with Gonzaga, partly because I do think against the Syracuse zone that the Gonzaga guards can get open threes instead of having to create threes, and that plays into what Zach Norvell, Geno Crandall, Josh Perkins do better. So I'm going to go with Gonzaga, even though it isn't a great on-paper matchup given strengths and weaknesses.
The one thing I will note is this. When Gonzaga played Washington earlier this year, I'm pretty sure, if I'm remembering this correctly, it was in Seattle, and they needed Rui Hachimura to hit a three, hit a foul line jumper at the buzzer, basically, to win it. And for people that may not have been living under a rock for the last 2 years, Mike Hopkins is running Jim Boeheim's defense at Washington. So that leaves me a little bit concerned about this matchup. Like, this is probably the worst eight seed I think that Gonzaga could have drawn just based on the way that they play. But I'm not ready to pick against them in the second round because I think that Gonzaga is probably one of like the five or six best teams in college basketball. And I think that the return of Killian Tilly makes a huge difference because now instead of having two big guys that can't shoot, they can put him out there with Brandon Clark or put him out there with Rui. And that changes things in terms of how Syracuse is going to be able to guard them.
Yeah, I just think Gonzaga wins, even though it isn't the eight seed that they wanted to see.
I am with you there. All right, Marquette and Florida State. And this, to me, is a very, very, very interesting matchup because I think that I want to take Marquette. Like, I want to love them in this matchup, but I just do not see a way that their kind of unathletic shooters are going to be able to get open against a team full of athletic big wings that are going to be able to lock them down.
The other thing is that I think Leonard Hamilton will pick things up full court a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's not good for Marquette.
Yep.
I'm on Florida State on this one. Think they're a slightly better team, and I think the matchup works out pretty well for them.
And it just seems like they've kind of hit their stride in March in each of the last 2 years. Last year was the tournament. This year in the ACC tournament, I think that they've been playing their best basketball. They won, what was it, like 11 of their last 12 in the regular season. They went on some run down the stretch of the year. Just it feels like they're playing their best basketball. And the one other thing is I think Hamilton is starting to figure out that Fiondu Cabangeli is actually his best player and the most valuable guy that he has on that team. And I think that he is utilizing him as such and playing him more minutes, even if it means that he's coming off the bench. It drives me absolutely insane, almost as insane as seeing Tony Bennett play Kihei Clark for 32 minutes a night. But it is what it is. I guess those guys are smarter than me.
I mean, who isn't smarter than you?
That's true. As I've said, those guys are ACC coaches that have won hundreds of games, and I am just some dickhead with a podcast. So, Florida State, we on that?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Buffalo and Texas Tech.
I love this game. Love it. But I'm going to lean Texas Tech. I think it'll be a highly entertaining game. I just think what you have is two really veteran teams and like tough physical teams. Texas Tech, however, has the best player on the court. So I'm going to lean Texas Tech. I just think Matt Mooney will do a good job defensively. I think on Massenburg, I think, you know, Culver will do a good job defensively. I just think Texas Tech has a little bit more than Buffalo does. So I'm going to lean to the Red Raiders.
I agree with you there. I think what it comes down to is whether or not Texas Tech can make shots. And as simple as that sounds, I do expect them to be able to create and make the open shots that they get against Buffalo. I'm not going to bet against Chris Beard in a matchup like this. I think that he finds a way to get the job done, even though I know I'm saying that knowing full well that a West Virginia team that Buffalo beat on the road earlier this year knocked off Texas Tech in the second round, the quarterfinals of the Big 12 tournament?
Yeah, and I think that was Texas Tech's just, you know, you have your game or two or three every year where you just don't have it. I just think that was a night Texas Tech just didn't have it.
Yep, I agree with you there. Now, this coming up, Nevada, Michigan, is I think the most interesting game in this region out of all of them because I want to take Michigan because they have all of these guys that can be really, really good one-on-one defenders. But I'm just imagining Iggy Brazdeikis is trying to slow down Jordan Caroline, and I'm just imagining Jordan Poole trying to guard Caleb Martin, and I have a very difficult time seeing how Michigan wins those matchups. And Nevada's entire, like, well, the what first they thing do is win matchups.
They're going to put Jordan Poole on Jazz Johnson.
Yeah, they probably will. You're right about that.
They're going to put Charles Matthews on the good Martin. They're going to put Xavier Simpson on the other Martin. Brazdeikis is a problem. But also the way that he can spread the floor is a problem for Nevada. And the fact that Nevada has no rim protection is an issue because Xavier Simpson, he can get into the lane and he gets where he wants. When there's a real rim protector there, it becomes a problem for him. There isn't one on Nevada. I think Michigan wins. Also, John Teske's ability to move his feet, that's really key.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I hadn't really thought about that. The other part of it is that John Beilein, just you want to bet on him in March.
Yes. He does a good job in March.
Yeah.
Sources tell me.
All right. Let's go with Michigan then. Gonzaga and Florida State. And didn't they play last year in the Elite Eight?
Am I making that up? Killian Tilly got injured.
That's right.
So no Killian Tilly in that game. Florida State won that one. I'm saying Killian Tilly makes a difference in this one. Again, it's frightening because of the Josh Perkins against pressure factor, but I think Gonzaga has just enough and has enough bodies against Florida State's front line that the Zags get the win.
So I don't know if they're going to have enough with the Josh Perkins factor thrown in. And I know that you are right there with me in being worried about whether or not Josh Perkins can handle a situation like this and handle a game like this. And I think this is the game where it shows up.
Yeah, it certainly could. I mean, it is a it's weird how Gonzaga, even though like I think everyone was seated properly in their region, they got like terrible matchup after terrible matchup after terrible matchup for them.
Yep. No, they
There's no way the committee did that on purpose because they're not smart enough to.
This is just a brutal matchup. I'm fine going with Florida or going with Gonzaga. If you want to take Gonzaga, I'll let you have this one and go with Florida in my own bracket. But okay. I want to put on the record for all these podcast listeners that that's the decision you're going to have to make. Do you trust Josh Perkins enough against Florida State, the pressure that they're going to bring? And Gonzaga fans will tell you that they do. And I can't get there myself.
And granted what we saw, what was it, 8 days ago or whatever. Oh, boy.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, there's going to be Gonzaga fans listening to this. Let's not bring it up. We don't need to give them PTSD. We don't need to trigger them. So let's just move on. Pretend that never happened. We never had that discussion. Texas Tech and Michigan in what will probably be the most physical game of the, what would this be, the Elite Eight?
Yeah.
Or the Sweet 16.
I like Texas Tech. Don't necessarily have a great reason why, but I like Texas Tech.
I think I do as well. The only concern that I have is a lot of what Texas Tech does is kind of like run their motion and then get to Jarrett Culver and let him go make a play. And I think that what's going to end up happening is Charles Matthews is going to be on Jarrett Culver. And when they say, Jarrett, go make a play, what happened when they had like that little lull? There was like the 3 week lull where Texas Tech forgot how to run offense. And a lot of that was when they were relying too heavily on Jarrett Culver and he wasn't able to get it done. So I guess the question comes down to, do you think their motion is going to be able to create shots against Michigan State's defense? And if it doesn't, do you think that Jarrett Culver is going to be able to beat Charles Matthews?
One reason I think it will is because of the quick, if this was the sweet, wait a minute. I'm getting all flustered here. I do think it will because you have what's the shooter's name? I want to say he's an Italian kid for Texas Tech.
Davide Moretti.
Yeah. Moretti, like he's going to keep someone in the corner, you know, where you can't help off of him, where I think it's going to allow their guys to turn the corner, you know, the Texas Tech guards, be it Mooney or Culver, to really get into the lane and penetrate, and then they got some ability within that. So I kind of do like Texas Tech to be able to get just enough offense.
I think that that's kind of where I fall as well. And I think that it's also the only thing that really concerns me, I guess, too, the other part of it is Michigan's two best defenders, Xavier Simpson and Charles Matthews, are going to be able to be on Texas Tech's two best creators. And that really hasn't like stopped Cassius Winston from going nuts and kicking Michigan's ass all over the place. But I don't know if we can have Matt Mooney and Cassius Winston in the same sentence without being hypocrites.
Yeah, yeah.
So are we going Texas Tech? Is that where we're leaning? All right.
Leaning Texas Tech.
Gonzaga against Texas Tech, which would be a fascinating matchup.
I just don't think Texas Tech would be able to keep Gonzaga off the glass. So that, and I love the athleticism of Gonzaga's bigs causing Texas Tech problems going to the rim. So I would, Brandon Clark especially. So I like Gonzaga in that matchup. Again, bad Josh Perkins factor, but I'm betting on Josh Perkins.
I think I actually agree with this take more than the one against Florida State. Although like I'm ride or die Chris Beard. I love this Texas Tech team. The concern would be that I think they're going to have to go big in this game, right? And the reason that they've been successful, like I said, is The Jarrett Culver thing, when they get down to it, they basically play him at the four, more or less, more often than not, with three shooters around him and Tariq Owens. And I just don't think that they're going to be able to do that. I think that Rui Hachimura or Brandon Clark or Killian Tilly or whoever is just going to bury him. And I think that that's the matchup that will cost them. And I say that loving Jarrett Culver as much as anybody that does this. So I am with you. I think Gonzaga wins this matchup. But I do want to be clear that if this is Florida State and Texas Tech, I would probably have Texas Tech going to the Final Four. Does that sound about right?
Sounds fair.
All right, let's move up to the South.
Virginia's not losing to Gardner Webb.
They're not.
Let's just go.
All right. And then Ole Miss, Oklahoma.
I like Ole Miss just because I think Oklahoma's playing like garbage recently.
I don't think that Oklahoma's very good, and I think that Ole Miss actually has some guards that can go out there and win a game on their own, and Terrence Davis and Breann Tyree, and I think that's what you need in March, so I am with you. Also, Kermit Davis always seems to get a win, doesn't he?
Really good coach.
Virginia, Ole Miss, is there any reason to consider Ole Miss for that upset?
Not really, no.
All right. Wisconsin, Oregon, in what I think is probably the easiest 12-5 game to pick. I'm almost assuredly going to have Oregon winning that game.
Me too, because Oregon's bigs are shot blockers, and they have a million of them, so they can commit fouls on Ethan Happ, and Ethan Happ really struggles with length and athleticism. If you can stay between Ethan Happ and the rim, he's going to miss shots. Oregon should, in theory, be able to do that. Then Peyton Pritchard, just good enough on the perimeter, and the athletic Oregon wings, who are big, can give Wisconsin problems. I like Oregon. I'm picking a Pac-12 team to win a game. Someone shoot me.
Yeah, I think Oregon's been the best team in that conference over the course of, what, the last 3 or 4 weeks?
I can tell you who's been the worst team.
Who's that? Yes, they have not been good. And we'll get to them in a minute. So, yeah, I think I'm going to have Oregon winning that game. And this ends up with another interesting matchup on the other side of that pod. We have Kansas State and UC Irvine. I'm going to say that I am 50% confident that Dean Wade will play in this game.
If I knew Dean Wade was playing, I'd be 100% confident K-State wins. I'm still pretty confident K-State wins because I think Barry Brown, I don't think Irvine has a matchup for Barry Brown. You just got just the gaggle of bigs that Kansas State has. I just think Kansas State's too disciplined to let Irvine get away with some stuff. So I got Kansas State winning this game.
I don't necessarily disagree. I think I might have Irvine winning when we fill out my bracket, but I got to think about it a little bit more because I don't know if I trust Kansas State. As silly as this sounds, seeing as they made it to the Elite Eight last year without Dean Wade, I don't know if I can trust them to win a game against, like, Irvine's good. They're a real good mid-major. And I don't know if I trust them to win this game, but I'm going to listen to you in this situation while I think about it more. So let's go Kansas State. Villanova and St. Mary's.
They both play the same way. Villanova has better players. Like, to me, St. Mary's trying to guard Eric Pascal is just a nightmare. And whereas Gonzaga struggles to play slow, Villanova plays slow as hell. I like Villanova to beat St. Mary's. Also, Villanova has the guards who can stay with Jordan Ford, which not many teams in the West Coast Conference have.
Yeah, that is definitely true. How do you think that Villanova matches up?
Man, I think they'll start with Booth on Ford. Now, keep in mind, Villanova's going to switch everything anyway.
Yep.
That's the other thing, is all that crap that St. Mary's does, Villanova's just going to spit on it because they're going to switch 1-5.
Yep.
And then on the offensive end, what they're going to do is get Pascal and Jermaine Samuels matched up against an immobile big, and I just don't know how St. Mary's is going to deal with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of the emergence of Jermaine Samuels as a guy that is actually effective that kind of ends up being like the real difference maker here, because I do think that Malik Fitz can do a job against Eric Pascal. And I don't know if they have somebody else that can match up with, like, and you got to throw in Sadiq Bey, who's kind of like in that same mold.
Yeah.
So we talked about how good, like, Villanova's good. Was that the conversation we had? How good they're going to be, like, next year once these guys get a little bit.
Couple years. Yeah,
couple years. Yeah, those guys are going to be good. So I'm with you on Villanova. And also, it's a proven fact that Villanova either wins the national title or loses in the second round of the tournament, and we got to pick them to do that. So, Purdue, Old Dominion.
Like my argument then.
Purdue, Old Dominion.
Purdue. Too many threes.
Yeah, I'm with you there too. Cincinnati and Iowa. I think this is a very, very easy
Iowa's
pick.
Horrendous. Cincinnati's going to wipe the floor with them.
And aren't they playing in Columbus?
Yeah, I don't think that matters all that much. Those tickets are sold. Like, they're sold.
But how many of those tickets are sold to people that are just going to put them on SeatGeek, ticket brokers that are trying to make money on the secondary market? I think a lot.
A lot, but Cincinnati doesn't travel great, honestly.
Fair enough. All right. I still think that they're going to kick Iowa's ass. That's not a concern
Iowa's
to me.
Iowa's terrible. They're horrendous, right? Like, Iowa's a team you have to put in the tournament because their resume says they're a tournament team. But when you watch them play, they're not a tournament team.
Yeah. Cincinnati's going to kick their ass. So let's not even talk about it. Tennessee, Colgate, you got Tennessee?
Yeah.
All right. We already have Virginia getting to the Sweet 16, Oregon and Kansas State.
I just can't trust a Pac-12 team to beat two good teams in a row. So Kansas State.
I think that you are probably right, although I will say this. I think that Oregon actually does kind of have like the athletes to make this be a problem. Like they're going to they both kind of.
When's the last time Oregon played someone good?
I don't know if they ever have.
Like December?
I don't
Let's know. Just stop. Oregon's not.
All right. You're I'm glad that you talked me out of that because I probably would have ended up trying to think my way into Oregon because they've been really good against shitty Pac-12 teams. So let's not overthink it. Kansas State. I'm with you, Snow. If it's Oregon and UC Irvine, you like Oregon there?
Yeah, because I just think their athleticism would overwhelm Irvine.
Villanova and Purdue. I think I know what your answer is going to be.
Villanova, because, again, with Purdue, what they do is they run guys off a million screens, and then they try to set a ball screen, get a roll to the rim. Villanova's just going to switch it, and they have all the confidence in the world that their bigs, who aren't really big, are going to be able to stay in front of the guard and that they're not going to let your roll man hurt you. And since the Purdue bigs can't pick and pop, Purdue's not as good a rebounding team as you think they would be. I just think it's a really bad matchup for Purdue. And on top of that, like offensively, Villanova, like they set up a zillion ball screens, and Purdue cannot guard ball screens.
Yep, that's where I think it really gets really does them in. Is I think that they're gonna end up running into one of those nights where Villanova makes like 19 threes.
What I will say about Purdue is at this point in time, because of the way Carson Edwards is playing, where he's shooting every ball, literally every ball, he's going to shoot 30 times. He's either going to make 7 or he's going to make 17. If he makes 17, they got a chance. If he makes 7, they have no chance. I think against Villanova and how disciplined they are defensively and the fact that Carson really doesn't go around people all that much.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is that you're going to get all these Villanova switches and what creates shots for Purdue is their offense and the execution they have in their offense. They don't have guys that can go out and make a play. And when you switch everything, the entire point of that is daring the other team to make a play against your guys. It's basically saying we're going to win this matchup on the defensive end of the floor, regardless of what the matchup is. And I don't think that Purdue has – like they're all jump shooters that get offense coming out of – or get shots coming out of Purdue's offense. And I think that Villanova, the way that they play, is going to be able to take that away.
Yeah, I just think it's a bad matchup for Purdue.
You know it's a bad matchup for Cincinnati? Tennessee.
Because Cincinnati tries to punk you, and one team has Grant Williams, and he ain't getting punked.
Hey, and then also Tennessee. Look, I just want to say something right there. Admiral Schofield, Brian Snow, just said that he thinks you're going to get punked by Cincinnati. You did not mention him by name. You said that Grant Williams is the one that's not going to get punked. I really wish you'd stop talking about
– soft earlier. I was about to say – and Tennessee has a matchup for Jaron Cumberland with Admiral Schofield.
All right.
Ha.
All right. If you say so.
Ha.
I'm glad we're on the same page with Tennessee because I think they're really good. Let's move on. Virginia, Kansas State. What do you like there?
Kansas State doesn't shoot well enough to beat Virginia.
Not even close. And I don't think that they have – as good as their guards are defensively, I think that you need big – athletic dudes to really take Virginia out of what they want to do on that end of the floor. Mm-hmm. And Kansas State has like little athletic dudes. And I just think that that's the kind of like the thing about Ty Jerome is he's not going to go around anybody, but he can kind of bully you a little bit more than I think people realize. And what messes with him is length and athleticism, not quick guys are going to try to get underneath him. So that's
he can shoot over the top of those Kansas State guards.
That's the other part of it too. So I'm with you on Kansas State. Then like same thing with Kyle Guy. Like he can run those little guys off of screens and get a shot off clean. It's when that he has those 6'8" Terrence Manns running after him that mm-hmm. he kind of runs into a little bit of trouble. Villanova and Tennessee.
I just think Tennessee's Villanova, but better.
Yeah, you made that point before that Tennessee is what Villanova and North Carolina and all these programs have been over the course of the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. And, you know, again, you know, where Villanova creates mismatches is with Pascal. Tennessee can handle that.
Yep.
That's why Villanova struggles with Xavier, because Xavier has a matchup for Pascal and Tyreek Jones. Tennessee does as well, and they're really good around him. I think Tennessee beats Villanova, and I don't know that Villanova will ever truly be threatening them late in the game.
So let me ask you this. You say that Tennessee has a matchup for Pascal. Are you referring to Grant Williams? Are you referring to Schofield? Are you referring to Kyle Alexander? Because I feel like they got 7 of them.
Exactly.
Okay.
The answer is yes.
Tennessee. Here we go. Tennessee and Virginia.
I can't predict Virginia to go to the Final Four until they get to the Final Four. It is policy.
All right, so we're going with Tennessee. Full disclosure, I will probably be having Virginia because I just think that this is the year they get it done. I'm fully bought in, and I love, love, love this matchup for Virginia because Virginia can go to their smaller lineup. I don't think Grant Williams can do anything against DeAndre Hunter. I think DeAndre Hunter is the single best one-on-one defender in all of college basketball. I think that he will be able to take Grant Williams out of what he wants to do. And if you take Grant Williams out of what he wants to do, you take Tennessee out of what they want to do offensively. And I don't think that Tennessee
makes sense.
Okay. Okay. No, I get you. I get you. I'm on the same page.
Policy's
all right.
Policy.
You got it. North Carolina, Iona.
I like Carolina's odds.
You know what else I like? The over.
Yes.
Utah State and Washington.
Utah State big.
Why?
One, they can make, you know, you got Merrill who can make shots, their guards can make shots, and Washington hasn't been good for a month now. Like, they just haven't been good.
I also think that Craig Smith is a hell of a basketball coach.
Yeah, clearly he is.
Yep. Sam Merrill's going to be, I think he might be the name that people really get to know by the end of this tournament.
That, and he'll be able to fall over and draw like 3 charges as well.
Yeah, that's very true. All right, Auburn and New Mexico State. This is a fascinating matchup to me, and I'm really curious your take.
I like Auburn just because I think they're going to make enough threes. Now, where it gets wild with Auburn is, like, they do so much stupid crap, just ignorant stuff defensively, which will give New Mexico State buckets. And then they don't rebound real well, but Auburn will make enough threes, cause enough turnovers. Like, can the New Mexico State guards handle Auburn's pressure? I just like Auburn to win this one.
Yeah, you know, I really want to take New Mexico State here because I think Chris Jans is a good coach. I think this is one of those mid-major teams that actually has guys that are athletic enough to compete at this level. But at the end of the day, Jared Harper is going to be the best player on the floor, and it's really not going to be close. Bruce Brown is going to be the best scorer on the floor, and it's probably not going to be all that close. And with the way that like Chuma Okeke has been playing, the way that Auburn can spread the floor, I want to take New Mexico State. I can't do it, though. I can't justify it in my head.
See, the matchup I want to take Northeastern over Kansas. I can't do it.
I actually think that is... Well, I like your initial read. I think that you should do it because I think Northeastern is the kind of team that can pull off an upset. They have veteran guards. They make a whole bunch of threes. They don't give up defensive rebounds. They don't turn the ball over. They're well coached. They execute. I think that this is the team that can get one of those matchups.
And like Kansas has been so bad away from home. Like they tried as hard as humanly possible to lose to Texas. Texas just said, no, we refuse to win. And then they played a West Virginia team who was on its third game in 3 days, who wasn't going to win. Like, Kansas didn't really look impressive in the Big 12 tournament. They just got an unbelievable draw. I mean, if you want to go Northeastern, I have no problem penciling.
I want to go Northeastern. I want to do it. No problem. Vasipushika. Is that how you say it?
You're asking me?
Yeah, that's a good point. What's
Ohio State? What do I know?
Speaking of Ohio State, we have Ohio State and Iowa State.
They're not beating your national title favorites.
Good. I'm glad that you said that. I love this Iowa State team. But look, here's the thing. I love them. But Snow, I'm not on the bandwagon. Because every time I get on the bandwagon, they end up going in the tank. So I am officially not on the Iowa State bandwagon. But I do have them beating Ohio State.
Yeah, they have no answer for those perimeters. None.
Houston and Georgia State.
As much as Kelvin Sampson will be going against his former assistant coach, Ray McCallum Sr., and Ray McCallum might have the scouting report, Kelvin Sampson, better players, they're winning.
Boom. I really want Georgia State to win, though. I just want to see Ron Hunter. I want to see him fall out of his chair. I think he's a great character that we have in college basketball. I don't think that this is a Houston team that is going to get beat by a worse team. I don't think they have a great ceiling, but they are just one of those teams. Like, they're going to guard the hell out of you. They're going to execute. They're not going to make mistakes. They got good guards. Corey Davis isn't going to get beat by someone that's not better than him. I just can't see him getting upset. So let's move on. Wofford, Seton Hall, Fletcher McGee versus Miles Powell. I know who you're going to take here, and I know who I'm going to take here, and I think it's going to be on opposite sides.
Very much so.
Try to talk me into Seton Hall.
There's no way, because you love Wofford too much. They could be playing Duke and you're still taking Wofford.
That's not true.
Seton Hall, to me, it's Quincy McKnight. Long, athletic, mobile guard who's going to shadow Fletcher McGee. That's a problem. Miles Kale will do it as well. And I just think the bigs of Seton Hall, again, rim protectors, which will allow the Seton Hall perimeters to extend. Kevin Willard mixing up defenses, applying some full court pressure, which Wofford isn't going to like. I just think Seton Hall's too big, physical, and athletic. And then they've got a dude who can match Fletcher McGee in buckets in Miles Powell. And actually, he's better than Fletcher McGee. So I don't – like, if you were to put these teams out there, like Vegas – I don't know what Vegas – what do they have, Rob? You're the Vegas guy. I would think Seton Hall's favored.
I think it's 4.5 right now. Let me double check on that before I actually make it official. I think the point that you made that is actually really good is the switching defenses thing. And the reason I say that is because Wofford is a bunch of dudes that are like rhythm shooters, right? They want to catch and shoot. They know where they're supposed to be getting their shots within this offense. They've practiced these things 100 times. Or a million times. Like Fletcher McGee, what he wants to do is he wants to come off that screen, he wants to catch off 2 feet, and he wants to lift, and he wants to get that shot up using his body as a shield in between the trailing defender, right? That's what he wants to do. And what Seton Hall is going to do is throw different looks at him defensively, and that is going to take rhythm shooters out of the offense that they get in and the offense out of the rhythm, and it's not going to let them get these open looks, and they're going to have to be figuring it out every single possession. And you know, that's what UNC Greensboro did against Wofford for like the first 35 minutes of that game in the SoCon title game. So
yeah. How's Wofford going to rebound the ball?
Not easily.
Like, that is frightening. Like, against Seton Hall, that Seton Hall's bigs are mobile, man. Like, Sandro can move. Torian Thompson, as crazy as he is, he can move. Like, their bigs can move.
Yeah, you're right. And something to note really quick. Wofford is favored by 2.5. I don't know where I got that 4.5 from. You know what it is? 4.5 is what Marquette is favored by against Murray State. That's what I was thinking of. Wofford is favored by 2.5.
That doesn't necessarily surprise me. I just think, Seton Hall's better.
I'm going to let you have this one. I don't necessarily disagree. I'm actually
shocked by that. I figured you'd go to the death for Wofford.
Here's the thing. Like, I just love how this Seton Hall team plays. And I Miles Powell is one of these dudes to me that is like ultra competitive, that is not going to let his team lose a game like this. I can see him popping off for like 40 when he gets like 30 of them in the second half. And I don't know who Wofford has that can like stop him from doing what he wants. And like, that's the thing about Miles Powell, for people that haven't watched him, is he's one of these guys that, like, even if you put your best defender on him, if he gets it, like, he's going to get the shot off that he wants to get hit the shot off, and he's going to make it if he's in a rhythm. And it doesn't matter what you do defensively. So even when he has good defenders on him, he's going to be able to make some of these ridiculous step backs and 30-footers that he takes and makes. And I just don't see how anybody on Wofford is going to be able to slow him down.
It seems difficult.
Kentucky wins?
Yeah, Kentucky wins.
North Carolina, Utah State. Is there any reason to believe that Utah State can run with them?
I love North Carolina, man. I really do. I just, as good as Craig Smith is and the whole deal, like, North Carolina.
Yeah, they're playing at a level right now that I don't think that that Utah State is going to be able to match. And I just like even with the big guy Nemus Cato or whatever his name is, I think that he'll be able to take stuff away in the paint. But the thing about this North Carolina team is it's not like the North Carolina teams that we're used to. They don't run everything through the paint. They don't run everything.
Yeah, you're taking away their fifth best offensive option. Congratulations.
Exactly. So let's move on. We have North Carolina advancing, Auburn and Northeastern.
Auburn, too athletic, too versatile.
Bruce Pearl in a tournament setting always seems to find a way.
Yeah, I think really Northeastern has nothing for Chuma Okeke.
I don't even really think we need to analyze this. Like, this is just Auburn's got dudes. Northeastern doesn't have the dudes. It's just a bad matchup.
Northeastern does have one dude, Bill Cohn. He's a dude.
Yes, he is. But there's only so much you can do when you have these guards flying all over the place and raining down threes left and right. Iowa State and Houston. I have a feeling this is going to be the one where we disagree.
I got Houston.
I got Iowa State, man.
Ah. I
got Iowa State, but look, I'm not back on the bandwagon. I'm not back in on this team because every time I get in on this team, they end up losing and shitting the bed, so I'm not in on them, but I would have Iowa State winning. But I'll let you have this one, Snow, because this is this is a group bracket, you know? Teamwork makes the dream work. So I'm going to let you have this one.
All right.
Just talk me through. Give me the process for it.
That's not what I'm passionate about. I'll be honest with you.
Give me the process for it. Just talk me through the reasoning.
I just think Corey Davis is kind of the guy in a tournament where you think he can get you 30. And as good as like Wyler Babb is, you know, that, and I just have a lot of confidence in Kelvin Sampson. Houston's got so many bigs who can just foul and rebound and be tough. Just kind of like Houston in this matchup, but again, it's not something I'm married to.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on. Real quick, my argument for Iowa State is that I just think that the way that they're playing with the pieces that they have, they are as dangerous as anybody outside of like that tier one group of seven or eight teams. But that is with the assumption that like the team that they are right now is the team that we saw in Kansas City and not the team that lost like six of their last eight regular season games. So let's move on. Seton Hall, Kentucky. Can Seton Hall get that second win over Kentucky this year?
Let's make it clear. Both teams are very different and are quite honestly a lot better than they were when the first time they met. What was that, December the 7th, I believe?
Something like that.
But Kentucky's a lot better. And I just don't see Seton Hall being able to beat them a second time. I like the Wildcats to prevail.
I'm with you there. I don't really think it needs all that much analysis. North Carolina and Auburn.
Perfect matchup for North Carolina. Team that wants to run. Team that's not going to overwhelm them. North Carolina. High, take the over.
I do think that Kobe White can be pressured a little bit. I just don't know if North Carolina has the guys that are really going to be able to bother him. So I am going to go with North Carolina. Houston and Kentucky.
Kentucky. PJ Washington's a big problem for Houston. They have no real way to combat that. And then I think Ashton Hagans can be a problem for Corey Davis. I like Kentucky. I think it's a bad set of circumstances for the Cougs.
Fair enough. For the record, this is the game where, you know how we said that Houston can handle the teams that are going to be better than, but they don't have the ceiling to beat the teams that are better than them. I think this is the perfect example of that. I would make the argument that Iowa State is also the example of that, and I think that Iowa State would give Kentucky a whole lot of problems if they had reached this point. because I do think that Talen Horton-Tucker is a guy that is a pretty good matchup for P.J. Washington. And when P.J. Washington isn't doing P.J. Washington things and playing like a top five player in college basketball, I think that significantly lowers the ceiling of what the Wildcats can be.
Understandable.
Do you think Iowa State could have a shot against Kentucky?
I do, but I'd still pick Kentucky.
Fair enough. North Carolina and Kentucky for the Final Four.
I think North Carolina's better, but for some reason I wrote down the name Kentucky. I don't know why.
Interesting. I think North Carolina gets the win.
I don't know why. I was like, Kentucky. Okay.
All right, so we'll go with it. Which means in the Final Four, we have a rematch of Duke and Gonzaga, and we have a rematch of Tennessee and Kentucky. Let's start
with... I do think subconsciously I wanted Tennessee-Kentucky Part 4.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. Although I do think that Tennessee-North Carolina would be fantastic, almost as good as Tennessee, or almost as good as what Kentucky-North Carolina would assuredly end up being.
Yeah. I mean, I just think there's a lot of chance for fun. But Duke-Gonzaga... Duke's a different team. Gonzaga's a different team. Let's make that clear. It's not going to be played in Maui in a sweatbox. Let's make that clear. Neither team's great shooting. Trey Jones, he finally ends the Josh Perkins reign of terror.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you there. In my personal bracket, I'll probably have Texas Tech in this spot, and that would be a very different matchup. I don't think Texas Tech could beat Duke. I don't think Gonzaga could beat Duke. I don't think anybody can beat Duke when Duke plays their best basketball game. And I do think you're right. I think it comes down to Josh Perkins against Trey Jones. And for the most part, like Perkins in the first time they matched up was really, really, really good. But I think that also came in what, the third week of the season before we really saw Trey Jones start to turn into the guy that he's been like over the last 2 months. So I think that has a little bit of effect on it as well. You're going with Duke?
I am.
All right. Tennessee and Kentucky Part 4.
Tennessee won the last one, so I'm going with Kentucky in this one. I mean, there's only so much of that matchup you can parse. We've seen it three times. It's been blowout, blowout, nip and tuck game. Obviously, we know what to expect. It's one team's going to make one more shot than the other one.
Yeah, that's really what it's going to come down to. Who has the last run? All it's going to come down to. Who has the last run?
I'll have Tyler Hero making a big shot. What the hell?
All right, I'm with you there. Duke and Kentucky for all the marbles.
By the way, how happy would CBS be with that?
That would be awesome. I would love it. Here's the thing. I think that Kentucky is probably like the sixth or seventh best team in the country right now. A lot of people think they're like, what, top three? I think they're like six or seven. And I don't think that they would be able to – I don't think this would be close if they played again. I don't think Duke's going to, like, kick the shit out of them the way that they did the first time. But I don't think that this is a entertaining national title game. I think it's similar to the one that we saw last year.
I tend to agree with you. I've got Duke, and I have – I don't want to say convincingly, but comfortably.
Yeah, by, like, 10 to 12. Same thing they did to Florida State, kind of a deal.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, there you have it. Duke is – guaranteed to be your 2019 national champion. Brian Snow said so. If it doesn't happen, make sure you add him and let him know that he let you
and
down.
And if you don't believe us, we both picked Villanova last year, and we both said it wouldn't be close.
Yep. And we both that picked North Carolina the year before, Villanova the year before that, Duke the year before that. That's not true. The Villanova thing is correct, though. We both told we did tell you guys that they were the best team in college basketball all year last year. And, you know, if you listened to us, you would have made a lot of money. I'm just saying.
Yeah, and all the other talking heads were talking up Michigan State, and we were like, why? Why?
Nope. You got to go with Villanova. Got to go Villanova. Well, listen, man, Snow, I do appreciate the time, man. I hope that you end up winning all of the money in your bracket pools.
I'd have to actually enter one, but if I do, hopefully I win money.
All right, man. I'll catch up with you. Thanks, Snow.
All right, see you.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.